Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, filling in for Brian, who is on vacation. President Trump has nominated Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
Judge Kavanaugh has impeccable credentials, unsurpassed qualifications, and a proven commitment to equal justice under the law. A graduate of Yale College and Yale Law School, Judge Kavanaugh currently teaches at Harvard, Yale, and Georgetown.
This is, of course, to fill the Supreme Court seat of the retiring Anthony Kennedy. Joining us to talk about the nomination and the legal and political implications is Jamie Floyd, host of All Things Considered on WNYC and our resident legal analyst. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Nancy.
And we're also joined by Alana Shore, congressional reporter for Politico, who joins us by phone from Washington. Hi, Alana.
Hi there.
So, Jamie, tell us about Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, he was the front runner, and Nancy, I said last night, or I guess yesterday at this very hour on the show, that he would not be selected, so I was wrong. But he has one very important thing in his record. As you alluded to yesterday, he has concluded in his writings that presidents should enjoy some immunity from investigation. Quote, I believe the president should be excised from some of the burdens of ordinary citizenship while serving in office, responding to civil lawsuits and criminal charges. So that's in his background. He's very conservative. He's an originalist, Nancy. That means he thinks the Constitution should be interpreted exactly how it was written. He clerked for Justice Kennedy, as did another of the people on the short list. Justice Kennedy would then have two clerks on the Supreme Court and many clerks in the lower courts. This is of great concern to me, Nancy. We can talk about that if you like. The D.C. Circuit is the court from which he hails. It's traditionally a feeder court to the U.S. Supreme Court, so that means John Roberts would be from that court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg from that court, Clarence Thomas from that court. So there is a certain lack of diversity in geographic diversity on the court. And he's also an Ivy Leaguer, so we have that lack of diversity. In terms of his opinions, he has written a recent dissent on abortion, so we can talk about that. He has said to the senators, Chuck Schumer grilled him about his view on abortions, and he said Roe versus Wade is settled law, but he has recently written an opinion, a dissent, that suggests that maybe he doesn't think so. He is very conservative on gun rights, generally favors Second Amendment rights, not a fan of the regulatory state. The rights of detainees are very limited, presidential powers very expansive. He has sought to throw out Obama-era environmental regulations, and just a very conservative judge. I have to say, however, he has checked every box you need to check to be a Supreme Court judge and justice. He has done everything you need to do to get there. So it's very hard to challenge him on the credentials. But progressives certainly should be and are alarmed.
Of course, he was one of the 25 on the Federalist Society's list that was the only influence, apparently, with this decision.
Well, the second time around. Now, the first time around, Nancy, he wasn't on President Trump's original list.
Not even the larger list?
He was not originally considered. He was considered this time around. So I think the Kennedy factor is a big one. And you brought this up yesterday, the fact that they courted a Kennedy resignation. And I think Justice Kennedy really wanted to feel that the court would be left in good hands. And, you know, I'm rather alarmed that a justice, like him or not, would have this much influence over who is going to sit on the court in his absence. If you look at Kennedy's photographs of Justice Kennedy and his clerks, it is hardly a group, rife with diversity. They basically all look like Justice Kennedy, conservative white guys. And so now we have Gorsuch, and we'll likely have Kavanaugh. And yes, they are qualified people, But Kavanaugh did make it a point yesterday to say, I've had a majority of women clerks clerking for me. He was very quick to point out that Justice Kagan had hired him to teach at Harvard, and he has two daughters, and he mentioned his wife and his mother, and women are a big part of his life, but not so for Justice Kennedy.
I found it interesting. I was listening to Leonard Leo, who's the head of the Federalist Society. He did an interview with NPR this morning. And, you know, this is what he had to say about the list of approved judges not being anything based on political beliefs.
What you really want are judges who are going to take a case, look at it fairly at the very beginning, consider precedent, history, tradition, the language of the Constitution, and make an independent and fair decision. And that's what I and I think many others in the conservative legal movement believe in. And I know that that's what President Trump was looking for.
Jamie, I think to me the key words in that sentence are history and tradition. And I think people on the liberal side of the spectrum would find that troubling, that that's what how decisions are going to be based on is history and tradition.
Well, again, yeah, justice, that's what the Federalists believe in, original intent and history and tradition.
I guess what I'm reacting to is tradition was the word that came up a lot in the gay marriage decision, right?
Yeah. Well,
anytime there's a debate about gay marriage, those who oppose it say that's not the tradition.
Right. And it's certainly back, if you want to go all the way back to the Loving decision, which, of course, was about marriage between and amongst the races. What Judge Kavanaugh said yesterday very carefully at the podium, and, you know, they spent most of yesterday. President Trump made his decision early in the day. So they spent most of yesterday crafting his remarks. And he very carefully said that judges should interpret the law, not make the law. Well, that could give great comfort to progressives, but it also goes to this question of tradition, right? If you simply are going to read the Constitution as written, then that is a traditionalist approach to the Constitution as well. So I take your point, Nancy. I certainly do.
I'm Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with WNYC's Jamie Floyd, and we have on the line Politico's Alana Shore about President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Listeners, do you have questions about Trump's pick to succeed Anthony Kennedy? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So, Alana, let's bring you in. You're waiting patiently. Let's talk about the politics of this. You know, what have you been able to glean so far about how, you know, what Trump was thinking about, why he went with him in terms of the getting his nomination through the Senate process and getting him approved?
Well, you know, as a Senate reporter, I have a pretty good window into what folks think up here. Regardless of the president's choice, Kavanaugh is going to be both a great and a not-so-great pick for a couple of reasons. Great pick because he's really a conservative establishment figure. He's a known commodity to a lot of Republican senators, and that's going to make them more comfortable than they would have been, say, with an Amy Coney Barrett, who had less of a long history on the bench. Specifically, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, two very pivotal Republican swing votes, are probably going to be more comfortable with Kavanaugh than they might have been with Barrett, because the way he's approached abortion and Roe versus Wade, although certainly not, you know, at all supportive to the level that progressives would want, has been somewhat cautious, to the extent that conservative groups actually were raising red flags about him. And in fact, Susan Collins said last night that she was really pleased with Kavanaugh's credentials, which, if we're reading tea leaves, might be a bad sign for Democrats trying to get her vote. Now, the ways in which Kavanaugh is not such a great pick in terms of speedy confirmation here in the Senate also goes back to his record, because he has a really long paper trail. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had been vocal even before the president tapped Kavanaugh about his concerns that Democrats would use that paper trail to drag out the process. There are hundreds of thousands, potentially even millions, of emails and documents sitting in the record about Kavanaugh that haven't been released yet. And we can expect Democrats to put their foot down and demand those to be obtained.
Yeah. Well, and Democratic Senator Cory Booker jumped in early last right after the announcement last night. He sits on the Judiciary Committee. Of course, he's New Jersey senator. He took to Twitter last night to say the nomination raises serious red flags because Kavanaugh believes that a president should not be subject to civil litigation or criminal investigation while in office. Booker says that means Trump just nominated a justice who's already reached conclusions on these serious questions. We have tape of him from last night.
He chose the one person that has specific writings that in many ways exempt him from not just investigation, but go as far as to say that he shouldn't even be the subject of such a matter. That alone to me is reason to oppose and to be with some conviction now, especially seeing the person he chose, with some conviction saying we should not be moving forward as a Senate with somebody who can ultimately undermine the rule of law and undermine the current proceedings that need to go forward, the Mueller investigation.
So, Jamie, I mean, this is an issue that could very well come before the court in the next year even.
Yeah. And Cory Booker was the first voice I heard after that of Judge Kavanaugh and Chris Matthews thereafter on MSNBC talking about Kavanaugh's nomination and ascension to the Supreme Court having serious implications for the Mueller investigation because he's written not only about presidential immunity from investigation, but also impeachment. He's written about impeachment. So there is that immediate problem. But also, as was pointed out, he has, in terms of the process, thousands of pages of documents. He was staff secretary in the White House. That is it's the fulcrum of documentation in the White House. It sounds like a dull job, but it is a critically important job. And then he worked on both Whitewater and the Starr investigation into Lewinsky and was a co-author of the salacious, I read it, Starr report. All of that documentation, if Democrats want to draw it out, is there to be read, not to mention his 300-plus opinions as a judge. I mentioned just one, the dissent in the abortion immigration case, which was a rather controversial and well-reported a story, but he has 300 other cases, and that's just the legal before after his political career. So he's a good pick. As she says, he's a good pick and in some ways a not so good pick in terms of the process.
We have lots of callers who are itching to get in on this conversation. let's go to Amy in Northport. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really want to ask, I mean, much as we may not be happy about it, we all knew that Trump was going to pick a very conservative justice for this position. So of the justices that we knew he was considering, where do we place Kavanaugh? Do we place him as the best of all the evils, or do we place him somewhere farther down, and did we really, is someone else, would one of his other choices have been a better choice?
You mean in terms of conservative jurisprudence?
Yeah, in terms of, I guess for a want of a better way of expressing it, the liberal agenda.
None of them were going to suit the liberal agenda.
Well, I know.
I would say Amy Coney Barrett was probably the most conservative, although she had or has less of a record. She's only been on the bench. President Trump appointed her less than a year ago. The others have a more considerable record, but the other three, all three men, are quite conservative, and Kavanaugh is extremely conservative. He's carefully conservative. Please weigh in.
Kavanaugh's ruling on Obamacare is one thing that we haven't mentioned yet, but we should know. And when I say ruling, I mean he wrote this opinion that really riled up some conservatives who say that he laid the groundwork for John Roberts to write that ultimate 2012 opinion upholding Obamacare.
Yeah.
And, Kavanaugh never waited on the merits of Obamacare, but he did say, it can be construed as a tax and thus under the federal government's purview. Conservatives were not pleased. So that's one element of his record, I otherwise agree, in which he might be construed as potentially less conservative than the others. It's fraught with caveats.
Yeah, as Nina Totenberg put it, he sliced the salami very thinly on that, in that opinion. You know, the interesting thing about judges, I had a couple of callers call in yesterday when I was on with Nancy, concerned that I wasn't more upset, because I'm a journalist, of course, so I try not to be too upset. I've been doing this since, you know, the Clarence Thomas hearing. You know, if you couldn't get upset then, you're not going to get upset now. But, you know, judges take the bench and they often evolve once they have that lifetime appointment. And I've seen that happen. I was at the Justice Souter hearing. He has since retired. So that tells you how long I've been doing this. So, you know, once they take the bench, you don't know the direction in which they're going to go once they have that judicial independence, the freedom to think with the pen in hand, or I guess now the keyboard in hand. And so I do think, and Justice Kavanaugh said last night that he believes a judge should be independent. I certainly think, you know, we as citizens should care deeply, and I'm glad that people care as deeply as they do. But I've watched the court now for 30 years, and if you add my law school career, longer than that. And I think the judges and justices, it's unlike Congress. It's not this partisan, thank God, this angry partisan place. Although, you know, Justice Sotomayor is very angry this term, and I understand why. But I do think they take it incredibly seriously, and they exercise judicial temperament and independence.
I mean, there has been a lot of change over the years in terms of what justices are willing, the kind of questions they're willing to answer during these confirmation hearings.
Yes.
The New York Times had an editorial this morning saying that we're not going to learn enough about Kavanaugh despite his long record, and that's a perversion, they use that word, of the Supreme Court confirmation
yes.
process, and that this goes back to the Robert Bork hearings from 1987. So, and Alana, you covered the Neil Gorsuch nomination. He fended off numerous questions about his beliefs. You know, did we learn enough about him?
Well, I mean, define enough, right? It is indeed true that Gorsuch sidestepped pretty much every Democratic attempt to get him to be specific. And that doesn't honestly bode particularly well for progressive groups' attempt to force Kavanaugh more on the record this time around, because it would honestly reverse decades of precedent on the Judiciary Committee, which has been, you know, somewhat respectful of nominees' unwillingness to speculate on hypotheticals. One thing you're hearing a lot up on the Hill these days is the quote-unquote Ginsburg standard, where Ginsburg, during her confirmation hearing under Clinton, said, you know, you shouldn't ask me to weigh in on things that I may hear about in the future without me knowing about them. So a lot of this is really in the eye of the beholder in terms of what the nominee should be asked and forced to answer.
Yeah, I agree with the Times assessment that the process was better for the American people when we knew more about the judges and their beliefs. And whether or not they could be true to the process and to the Constitution, despite their previous writings. Now, that doesn't mean Justice Bork should have been confirmed. I'm not suggesting that necessarily the process failed there, but it seems to have failed thereafter.
Okay, well, let's take another call. We have Mordecai in Brooklyn. Hi, Mordecai, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking this call. I'm very, very bothered by the descriptions of these justices as originalists or strict constructionists, and the typical listener could hear that and think that that's normal. Like, of course you're going to read it the way it was written, when, in fact, historically that's not true. And I think that we should be all in arms about this. This is a very recent idea. James Madison did not believe in that. There's many examples where he was standing in the room and no one asked him, what did you mean when you wrote the Constitution? You know, this idea that this has become quote-unquote conservative is not conservative at all. It's a very radical stance.
Well, I'm not suggesting that it's right. I'm just suggesting that this is what Brett Kavanaugh believes. It's also what Justice Scalia believed. It's what Clarence Thomas believes. And it's what Samuel Alito believes.
Okay.
You can take it up with them.
I'm hoping for some journalistic leadership on pushing back against this.
Journalistic leadership, my role is to report. It is what they believe. I don't believe it. I'm with Thurgood Marshall. I believe the Constitution is a changing, living, breathing document. And in fact, Justice Kennedy who I do believe is a conservative, and I know he would describe, he doesn't, they don't like these labels, by the way. They don't like these labels. But Justice Kennedy, I will say, and I know the man, is a conservative. He was raised in a Republican family. He is a Republican. But he has written in his opinions and read from the bench that the Constitution, the founders could not contemplate the ways in which society would change. And that's in the Obergefell opinion. I'm not reading from it now, but I've heard him say, I've heard.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. And we've played it here on our air recently, in fact, when he retired.
And let me just interrupt. Obergefell was the gay marriage decision.
Yes, gay marriage decision. They could not contemplate the ways in which society would change, that at one point in society we might be blind to our prejudices. This is, you know, me paraphrasing Justice Kennedy. I hope he'll forgive me. But we might be blind to our prejudices and then later be enlightened. And so the Constitution has to evolve to see that. That's the way Kennedy chose to, I think to the frustration of some conservatives, see the Constitution in some cases. In other cases, he was very conservative. Clarence Thomas has been consistent from the day he was appointed to the court. He has been thoroughly conservative. He is an originalist. He reads the Constitution and really tries to, I think, in some cases, force a round peg into a square hole. But that is what he tries to do. And, you know, it is a much easier way to live your life. I'm reading the document. This is what it says. I don't care about the facts. I don't care about what's happening in the world.
Dishonesty is horrible.
Yes, I find it very frustrating myself. I'll be very honest with you. But that doesn't mean that I can tell you that there are not originalists out there. They are out there. As a journalist, I have to tell you that they are. I've met many of them. And this is one way in which some people interpret the Constitution.
Well, and let's expand this conversation out to sort of the politics of having this originalist interpretation of an approach towards the Constitution.
Yeah.
So, Alana, you know, is this an issue that the senators on the Judiciary Committee are going to be able to make any hay with, or is this just something either you believe it or you don't, and you have the votes or you don't?
To be blunt, I would say it's mostly the latter at this point. We live in a hyper-partisan era, and certainly all the points being raised are legitimate with respect to one's personal legal perspectives. But when it comes to the Judiciary Committee, I mean, you're pretty much going to see Republicans align with this perspective, and Democrats disagree with it. That's just the way the cookie crumbles politically up here these days.
And you did talk about the cache of decisions that Kavanaugh has written, and that will provide a lot of fruitful exploration for the committee. What else do you see? I mean, what kind of role do you think the Mueller investigation and the Russia inquiry is going to have in these proceedings?
I think that's really one to watch, and here's why. Democrats had pretty much settled, even before a nominee was chosen, on a two-part message that relied on Roe v. Wade, protecting abortion rights, and protecting Obamacare. These are issues that poll well with independents as well as their base, the need to have a justice who won't roll back the ACA, who won't roll back Roe. And now we've got the Mueller plotline potentially coming in as a primary topic here, just because Kavanaugh has such of an extensive paper trail writing about these issues. And because we could see Robert Mueller try to make a move to potentially subpoena the president as soon as this month, right when the confirmation hearings are picking up. Mm-hmm. But one other political/policy issue we haven't discussed that I'd like to flag is surveillance. Rand Paul is not a guaranteed yes on this nomination yet.
No.
And that is because Kavanaugh has a pretty expansive view of the government's ability to collect metadata from Americans, the ongoing issue of, you know, our right to privacy in the government wiretapping program. So, you know, there are a couple of other policy issues that might come out of left field because, as Jamie pointed out, Kavanaugh has issued so many opinions, and people on the Hill are only now starting to dig into potential minefields. But I just wanted to flag the Mueller and the surveillance issues as something that could slip up Kavanaugh.
Alana, will they look beyond his opinions? Will they also look look at all of this other paper, like the White House staff secretary material, as well as other things he's written, speeches, et cetera?
I mean, I think they'll absolutely certainly try. There are some nonpartisan advocacy groups that are trying to, you know, revamp FOIA suits and get some legal action going to force those records out into the open. But a lot honestly depends on how aggressive Democrats on the Judiciary Committee are going to be. You know, Dianne Feinstein came out with a strong statement critical of this process and critical of the nominee. But Dianne Feinstein has yet to say, for instance, I don't think the committee should vote on this nominee until we see the whole paper trail. That would be setting a pretty high bar, and it'll be interesting to see whether she does.
Okay, let's go to another caller. We have Julie in Hastings. Julie, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. It strikes me that everybody knows that Kavanaugh is Catholic, that Barrett is Catholic, that the five, that, you know, the other big frontrunner who didn't get it, that the five majority conservative Republicans are Catholic, but nobody talks about the fact that all of these justices rule against the longstanding official teachings of their church in most of their cases.
Yes, and your point is?
My point is that nobody talks about the fact that these Catholic judges rule in their rulings against the Catholic Church's position in most of their rulings.
And do you think they should be asked about this in the confirmation hearing?
That's a very good question, but I think it's a basic fact that most people don't know, and they think the opposite.
I'm trying to better understand
about the judges.
I'm trying to better understand what you're asking. Are you saying that it is wrong of these judges to say stand by the precedent of Roe v. Wade if the Catholic Church is against abortion and they're Catholic?
No, ma'am. I'm saying that on most of their decisions, they oppose their own church, and people don't know that. Everything except sex and gender, and people don't know that, and those are the issues that people care about. Money and politics, labor, the environment, etc., and people don't know that. It's kind of a journalism question, sort of like the guy who wrote in about, who called in about the originalists.
Mordecai.
The journalist letting people know where the judges stand,
yeah,
vis-a-vis the nation's largest religion.
Well, you know, it is fascinating that six of the nine, when Kennedy was still on the court, six of the nine, Nancy, are Catholic. And I guess now will still be. Assuming he's confirmed, and then he'll go back. If he's not confirmed, Trump will go back to his list of predominantly Catholic people. I do find it fascinating, and always have, the predominance of Catholic people who wind up on the U.S. Supreme Court. I said this to you yesterday. Is it something in the rigor of the Catholic training? I went to Catholic school. I'm not on the U.S. Supreme Court. But it is, it's an interesting thing. And Alana, I've not noticed in the course of all my covering of these confirmation hearings, questions about can you separate your faith from your judgments as a justice. I know when people run for office, they get asked this question. You know, if you're going to be governor of the state, can you impose the death penalty if you're a Catholic? You know, Governor Cuomo. And they say, yeah, sure, I can, you know, sure, I can separate my personal point of view from my religion. You know, if that's my duty as governor, I'll do it. You know, we don't have that now anymore, but in New York, but in states where they have the death penalty, this comes up all the time. But I've not heard that question asked of anyone who is going to serve as a U.S. Supreme Court justice. Have you?
I have not, but it's important to remember that Amy Coney Barrett fielded a version of this type of question during her confirmation hearing to
with
the bench last year.
Feinstein,
yes.
Right?
And Feinstein famously said, you know, the dogma lives loudly within you, which she saw as a problem, obviously, that Barrett's very deeply held faith might seep into her judicial judgments. And that was honestly seen as a huge green light for Barrett to join the high court in the eyes of many conservatives, because she strongly defended her Catholicism.
skepticism in the face of Feinstein's questions. But of course, we're not getting Barrett, we're getting Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks on the right may be disappointed about that. But, you know, I would also expect Feinstein and potentially others on the committee to raise a similar question to Kavanaugh nonetheless.
And getting back to Mordecai's earlier point, perhaps he'll get some questions about his originalism and how strictly he adheres to the letter of the Constitution rather than the spirit of it.
Certainly.
And to stay on the issue of Roe v. Wade and Catholicism, maybe not, let's take one last call. Eric in Manhattan, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I think that, first of all, let's go back to the Kennedy, not Justice Kennedy, but John F. Kennedy. I remember a lot of these questions about his Catholicism were, raised during his presidential candidacy. I was very active in politics back then. I think that even considering the religious beliefs of a nominee is probably unconstitutional in and of itself. I agree with Thurgood Marshall that the Constitution is a living organism, but the method for changing it is by amending it, not by interpreting the law from the bench. So asking these people questions about what they might or might not do in cases that are going definitely to come up before the court is patently wrong.
That you're precisely right. The role of the Supreme Court justice is not to make the law. The role is to interpret the Constitution. So thank you for pointing that out. And the justices are there only to interpret. And I just took another look at Article 3 today, thinking Nancy might ask me about it again because she did yesterday. And their role is simply to interpret the Constitution, not to make law. Congress makes the laws. And the religion of the justice really should not factor in. We're talking about it simply because it is of interest, that I find it interesting as a Catholic that so many Catholics wind up on the court. Did you have a question about abortion?
Yeah, I mean, I support Roe v. Wade. And I think that if we want Roe v. Wade, I'm a conservative Republican, and I support Roe v. Wade. But the bottom line is, if we want to make it into law, let's do a constitutional amendment and solve the issue once and for all.
Hmm. It's a difficult process, the amendment process.
But it's a lot less difficult than having these arguments, nomination after nomination.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just had another case, the NIFLA case, up before the court, the Crisis Pregnancy Center case. It was really a compelled speech case, a First Amendment case. And we didn't even have time today, Nancy, to talk about the ways in which the First Amendment has been weaponized in some ways to address certain issues, you know, starting with Citizens United, the campaign finance case, which was authored by Kennedy, and now working its way into the abortion issue and other areas, the union case, Janice, this last term. So the last abortion crisis pregnancy case that Justice Kennedy was a part of was this NIFLA case, and essentially they used the free speech argument in an abortion context. But this nominee, Kavanaugh, has written a dissent in a rather controversial case about an immigrant girl who wanted to get an abortion. And he wrote a very fiery dissent, and you can find it online, anyone who is curious to see what his views may be, arguing that she should not have the access to the abortion. Now, the facts are very specific because she was an immigrant and she was trying to get this abortion. And he lost out in the end. The larger bench ruled in favor of her right to the abortion. But I'm sure he will be asked a lot of questions about it in his confirmation hearing.
Thanks, Eric, for your call. There are so many issues that come before the court. I would fear a process in which we are stuck and can't get decisions and have to legislate every single thing. So, I mean, you know, so that is troubling in and of itself. We're going to have to leave it there. There's so much more to talk about, but we've run out of time. Jamie Floyd is WNYC's host of All Things Considered and our resident legal analyst. Alana Shore covers Congress for Politico. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.